This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Taylor Lancaster will tell you she's an artist. She also lives with schizoaffective disorder and major depressive disorders. Those labels make her feel stigmatized and misunderstood. A team of graduate students from the UNC, University of North Carolina School of Social Work, set out to collect stories of people like Taylor and share those voices with a broader community. The students featured Taylor and 17 other interviewees in the multimedia installation Hear Our Voices, on display next Monday at UNC Chapel Hill. Elizabeth Anderson and Nina Honeycutt are social work students and helped put the project together, and they joined Taylor Lancaster in the studio today. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, tell me about the genesis of this project. Where did it come from?
Sure. We are in a class this semester as first-year social work students called Confronting Oppression, and our professor, Dr. Iris Calton-Linnae, offered us this opportunity, instead of doing just an in-class presentation, to do something that, as she worded it, something that would have an impact. And so our class really took that idea and ran with it, and one of our classmates, Lynn Weatherby, had the idea of creating a digital time capsule to capture the voices of people that are sometimes erased from history. So that was sort of where the project began, and we worked together as a team of 17 students to collect those histories and make that happen.
That becomes a very delicate project because you're talking about people, I think we're going to use the term at some point, marginalized communities, right? Any term that we use is going to stigmatize that population. Mm-hmm. And yet it's an effort to bring the voices of that population to the public so that we can hear, you know, everybody's listening to each other. How do you go about identifying people like that in that kind of sensitive environment that you're moving through?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because people might not identify themselves as marginalized. But luckily, we had a number of classmates with deep roots in the community and who know people from all different walks of life. So people that have disability or mental illness. Some of us work with refugees and immigrants. So we were able to kind of put feelers out into our own personal communities to be able to recruit people from the project. And it was really important to us that that the people that participated really wanted their voices to be heard and that their voices were heard in their own words without any like other context or without any editing. So we really strove to try to protect their voice as well.
Well, let's hear one of those voices now. This would be 74-year-old Hetty. She's a retired nurse practitioner and she deals with chronic pain.
I don't know who else is dealing with it. And I don't know what it feels like for other people. I just know it's overwhelming for me at times. And I don't think people realize that. So unless people can see it in me, they don't know what it's like. They don't know what it feels like. They don't know what kind of losses it brings. They don't know how it changes how you feel about yourself.
And that's a recording of Hetty, who provided her testimony to UNC social work grad students. They were speaking, I'm talking with Elizabeth Anderson and Nina Honeycutt, who helped organize the project. Nina, tell us about sort of some of the other participants in this project.
Sure. Other interviewees or
Yes, interviewees.
Sure. So we worked really hard, like Elizabeth said, to reach out into our own networks to connect with people who wanted their stories to be heard. One thing that we've learned this semester is marginalization occurs at intersecting levels. So we have people that identified being marginalized at intersections of race, class, age, legal status, mental illness, health in general. And it was important to us to have those identities presented on the terms of the interviewees. And so part of our installation involved having the interviewees write, you know, a 2-3 sentence descriptor of their identity. And an interesting thing to learn was that sometimes how we would identify someone is not how they identified themselves. And that was a great takeaway from this project.
Well, Taylor Lancaster, you are one of the interviewees, and I've managed to keep your voice out of this conversation for about 5 minutes, remarkably. Let's hear from you and talk about your participation and how, first of all, why you chose to participate and how you chose to identify.
Well, I chose to participate mostly because I believe ignorance breeds fear. And something that has really hit home for me for a while was the stigma of people with mental illness. Because ever since I was diagnosed. They treat you differently once they figure out that you have this mental illness, and they think you're violent, or you're gonna jump off a building or stuff like that. And I wanted to be able to have that, my voice heard, I guess. And one thing about people with mental illness is it's not just an abstract concept that they can't use their voices. It's actually sometimes a physical problem, because there are negative symptoms, what are called negative symptoms, in people with like schizophrenia, for instance, and they literally lose cognitive function. So I feel like since I can articulate how I'm feeling and what it's like and what it feels like, that I have to take every opportunity possible to tell people what it feels like.
It seems to me you had to navigate that same kind of delicate field of sort of identifying yourself as marginalized, right, and taking on the stigma or the risk of stigma in order to take the bold step of saying, but here's what I have to say for myself. Did you wrestle with that at all?
I did not. Yeah. What I did wrestle with was which population to identify with. Because I identify, as queer, I identify as on like different gender problems, I identify as mentally ill. So I had to figure out, which which way I wanted my interview to go. So I tried to stick with mental illness as much as possible.
What did it mean to you that people wanted to hear your story? I mean, when these students come to you and say, will you tell us your story? What was your reaction?
Oh, I thought it was great. I was so excited. And the excitement got me through the like fear of cameras and being interviewed and everything. My interviewer, Haley, was amazing and made me feel safe and comfortable. And we did a video recording, and I just thought the project was phenomenal, and I can't wait to see it on Monday.
Nina, I'd be curious to hear from you how other participants dealt with this question. And again, you're sort of approaching it as that this is a group that is, for one reason or another, either powerless or has some less traction in this. Did they see themselves that way?
That's a good question. I think in working with the person that I interviewed and then reviewing interviews that came in, I think a common theme that Taylor touched on was this obligation to speak despite fear or despite having power taken away, and to work diligently and intentionally to take power back and to promote your story and your community's story.
Elizabeth, were there any common themes among the people you spoke with?
Yeah, definitely. So I think as Taylor's sort of mentioned already, I think the importance of being seen and heard. I think everybody really wanted to have their voices heard, not just by the broader community, but also by a lot of people mentioned wanting lawmakers and people who make decisions to be aware of their voices, because they're not always taken into consideration when the policies that really impact them are made. A lot of people mentioned also the importance of not giving up hope. I think things have been really difficult for a lot of different communities, especially right now in history with stuff that's going on in our state and in our country. And so, but a lot of people really expressed that feeling that, they didn't want to give up the fight, and they didn't want anyone else to either. There was also a great commitment to advocacy for their communities and for other communities that maybe they're not even a part of. The notion that everyone is in this together, and while one person is not free, none of us are free.
Some of that might have come through in your conversation with a first-generation American, Jocelyn, whose parents immigrated to the U.S. from Guatemala.
If I had one wish that I can make come true, is that people stop looking at the color of others' skin. Because after all, we're all human and we are all one. What does the color of your skin matter?
Jocelyn is featured in the Hear Our Voices project. I'm talking with Taylor Lancaster, who also participated, and organizers Nina Honeycutt and Elizabeth Anderson. Taylor, you talked about the fact that when people learn of your diagnosis, they treat you differently. Mm-hmm. How about you, and how did that change for you when you now suddenly there's a name for maybe some of the symptoms you'd been experiencing? Did that change your idea of who you were?
It did and it didn't. One thing that I strive to do is always say I am a person with schizoaffective disorder. I am not schizophrenic. There's a big difference. I'm a human first. I happen to have a mental illness. So having it, it took a long time to diagnose me properly. I was at first just mental, major depressive disorder. And then once they found out about the psychotic symptoms and stuff, they got a label on it. And that actually made me feel better because there was a reason this was happening. And having that reason laid out and like all of the symptoms were matching, like it helped me a lot.
Tell us about your art. What kind of art do you do?
I do a lot of abstract right now. Work with watercolors and inks. I did a whole series on what my voices sound like to me. So I wrote on the
forgive me, but are you talking about hallucinatory voices?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, okay, that's okay. But
just to be sure, yeah. I hallucinate constantly, both auditory and visually. So I would listen to my voices and paint while I was listening to them and writing down what they said. And I'm hoping to kind of get that into a show somewhere and see that up, and that would be really great.
I would think that would be gorgeous for us to see in any context. Does it help? Is it helpful to you to do that?
Oh, it's so helpful. Yeah. It's amazing. And I go to an art therapy group once a week, arts and peer support group at the Art Therapy Institute in Chapel Hill. And having other people like me and to be around them is totally comfortable because they know your illness and they don't treat you different from it because they have similar problems. Mm-hmm. And you get to do art in a comfortable space and you get to get your feelings and emotions out. And it's art is amazing.
Well, you know, and I'm hearing you talk about it. And I'm looking at a little piece that you're working on now, even as we speak. And I know this has to be difficult for you. There have to be barriers. This creates some barriers, I'm assuming, and some obstacles just in sort of getting by every day.
Yes.
At the same time, as I hear you talk, I think about the gift of seeing a work of art that would allow me to see visually what I hear all the time. So while it is, I'm not going to dismiss the difficulty of this, there is also a gift in this that it would be a shame if we lost if your work hadn't come to light. Well, I wonder about that. Let me ask this to Nina, one of the organizers. I mean, this is the other side of it. We're talking about either disabilities or some other form of marginalization, but we should see that there are gifts that are also sort of inherent in this at the same time, right?
I want to be careful not to speak and generalize people's experiences. Mm-hmm. If Taylor describes this as a gift, then that is her right to say. I think an important takeaway from this process, this project that Elizabeth touched on earlier was not contextualizing people's stories and letting them speak as they wanted in whatever form they wanted and they were comfortable with. We didn't want to be exploitative.
Right. But there is for the viewer, I mean, this would be what I would have permission to take away. And if I suddenly am given a gift because I see things in a new way that I hadn't done because I went to your exhibit.
Yes.
You know, don't I have the right to walk away from that and not impose on, I don't want to impose on Taylor,
right,
whether this is a gift or a liability, but I walk away saying, wow, I never thought about it that way.
That is one of the goals of the project, and you're right. We want that connection to happen. We want to say, like, oh, I have this similarity from someone with someone that I thought I was so different from, and facilitating connections while amplifying voices of our participants was one of our major goals.
Yeah. I want to hear from another interviewee. This is Theo Cunningham, who is interviewed as part of this project.
The biggest thing that I fear right now is actually the fear of my entire race becoming eradicated. And the reason that is because a large amount of the African-American community lack knowledge of self, and a lot of us don't really understand the system and the way that the system was built. So in order for us to actually thrive in the world that we live in, we have to have the need or the want to actually learn about the things that are going on, whether it be politics, the food that we're digesting into our bodies, the housing projects that we live in, worker status, social status, everything that the government is putting on us as basically what would be pretty much like an unspoken warfare. It's the things that we don't talk about on a regular basis, but they affect every single Black American family in America.
Theo Currington, who is interviewed for the project that we're talking about today. I'm talking with Taylor Lancaster, Nina Honeycutt, and Elizabeth Anderson in this project. Elizabeth, tell me what you've learned just in sort of taking these testimonies and putting this exhibit together.
It's been a real honor to get to work with everybody and to get to share their stories. And I think that I feel so grateful that in sharing their stories, I've been able to learn as a social worker a little bit more about the way we label people. And I think even social workers sometimes get in the habit of assigning labels to the people that they're working with. So saying, I work with people, I work with immigrants, or I work with people that have a disability, or I do this. And I think one thing that really came to light for me was to reserve the labeling of others until they'll give you who they are. And I feel like that this was a good practice of that, because there were so many instances where I thought going into an interview or hearing an interview, I thought I knew what somebody was going to say, and it wasn't what they said. So that was an important takeaway for me, too. And I hope, too, it will surprise some of our viewers to learn more about somebody that they might have had already had like a prejudice or stereotype about, to learn more about who these individuals really are.
And certainly amplify our understanding and not be reductive. But Nina, it gets back to this question: as a professional, as a practitioner who's going to have to do this, I mean, with Taylor, when you talk about the fact that you were relieved to get a diagnosis, to put a name on it, because now it was it gave you something to do and a way to understand it. As a social worker, you're going to have to do the same delicate dance, aren't you? I mean, you're going to have to be able to put someone in a category in order to know what to do, and then sort of remain open-minded about them as a human being.
Mm-hmm. I think, like Taylor said, that sometimes having a diagnosis or a word that kind of describes like a constellation of symptoms or feelings that someone's having can be helpful. It is necessary to achieve treatment or to obtain treatment in our culture right now to have that. But like Taylor and Elizabeth have both touched on, it's important that even if someone has a diagnosis or a label or identifies themselves to you, to remember that they are more than that.
What's your takeaway among other things? What have you learned from this project?
I actually brought in a quote that was really powerful to me that reminded me that, to me, after participating in this, it is a call to action to get involved and stay involved and to keep learning. And this quote is from Shanae Wallace, who's a craft person in Durham. And she said, "To people outside of my community who are not yet feeling the negative effects of this administration, let me just say this. The erosion of basic human rights does not just stop on its own. The sea may not be lapping at your doorstep right now, but keep looking the other way while it eats away at the shore. And one day you will wake up in the home you mistakenly believed was impervious to the tide, breathing in ocean water." And I thought that was so powerful, and a powerful reminder that oppression affects us all, and that I think Elizabeth said this earlier, that no one is free if we are not all free.
Taylor, what about you? What have you taken away? How has this changed you, or has it, just participating in this?
It made me feel stronger, I think, about myself and about mentally ill people in general, and it made me feel like I can say more and get more out there. And I just want everyone to know that, we're all human and we're different, and that's okay.
Talking today with Taylor Lancaster, Nina Honeycutt, and Elizabeth Anderson, who are part of the installation Here Are Voices on Display, from 1 until 5 next Monday at Tate Turner Kuralt Building at UNC. And you can find the details at our website, stateofthings.org. I want to thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Just ahead, we preview a benefit conference to fight ALS with singer Nina Freelon and architect Phil Freelon on the State of Things. Do stay with us.